Okay, podcast number five, I believe. We have so many friends around the world that are sailing and also affected pretty hugely by global events, pandemics, and other bits. We thought, like, we'd see how they're getting on when we all talk. So today's podcast, we are talking to our friends Josh and Benita, who are sailing Nanji, to all of you who don't know. Pretty amazing YouTube channel. They are impeccably, disturbingly good surfers. and from our point of view, I feel completely humbled with this, with Yoshi's ability to catch a wave. When I look like I'm a flailing pig on a fiberglass board. So welcome Yoshi and Benita to our podcast.
Awesome.
So we've got some questions for you, and you know, we will obviously hope that everything, you're safe and that your families are safe, because that's the important thing. Without further ado, let's ask you how you're getting on. Tell us firstly a little bit about your channel for those of you who don't follow Sailing Nanji.
Okay.
Well, we've been sailing, or we've been living on board our boat Nanji for 3.5-4 years now, I think.
Yep.
And we first sailed away from the Queensland coast in 2017 in July. So we've been offshore cruising for probably however that mass is, about 2.5 years.
3 years
now. Yeah, and so we first left and went to the Pacific, and since sailed through Asia and done a lot of boat work, and we went back into Indonesia for a season, and since returned to Thailand, and we are now in Langkawi. We had big plans of crossing the Indian Ocean this year, but how everything is unfolding, we don't really know what the next plan is, I guess.
Yeah.
Right, yeah, I know. I think a lot of people are in that position at the moment, So you're definitely not alone there. So tell us a bit about why you decided to kind of move onto a boat and start sailing around the world in the first place. Kind of prompted that decision?
So we were ocean addicts before we were sailors, and our love for the ocean, like Nick said, the surfing, and we lived in a bus, and we towed a tinny, which is a small boat, around, and every spare second that we had, we were in the ocean, we were free diving, spear fishing, absolutely addicted to it. And then we got chatting one day, and we're like, what if we lived on the water? Like, how good would that be if the ocean was our home? And so we started researching boats, and we didn't know how to sail. We had no sailing experience. And it just kind of grew from there.
I guess things elevated quite fast because, yeah, living in the bus, and then we were restricted to just travelling around Australia. And then we thought, well, if we have a boat, we can travel around the world. So, yeah, it only took a couple of months, and we found ourselves Nanji. Yeah. And
where was she? Where was she when you bought her?
So we were in Western Australia at the time, and Nanji was in Airlie Beach in Queensland, Australia, which is the exact opposite side of the country. Nanji could have been anywhere. Nanji could have been in Tasmania, and we would have went to Tasmania and bought her. We pretty much fell in love with Nanji straight away, and every boat we looked at was always compared back to Nanji, and so we bought Nanji.
Pretty
pretty
cool.
Much. Yeah.
So tell us a little bit about Nanji. Tell us about the boat itself.
She's a Bruce Roberts design. It was 36-foot design that was stretched to a 40. So it's 40-foot long, 3.4 meters beam. We're a full keel vessel, and we're a cutter rig sloop. So we have like a center cockpit. So we've got a big aft cabin, V berth.
Yeah,
and otherwise the rest is just pretty much living space.
We've done a lot of work on her. When we first bought her, she was in a pretty bad way. She'd been neglected for a year, and so we didn't know anything about boats, but we got stuck right into it. We were on a pretty big budget, so a pretty tight budget. So we did all the work ourselves, and that's how it all started, I guess. And
she's gone from being a derelict boat that floated into something we're pretty... pretty pride to call our own now.
Yeah.
Well, listen, I mean, we watched your video a couple of weeks ago, and to tell you the truth, it is every sailor's worst nightmare. Firstly, you know, the work that you've done on fiberglass to get Nanji up and afloat again is insane. You know, congratulations. You know, you really are a craftsman there. So for those of you who haven't watched their video, they were on a mooring ball, and you've grounded your boat and put a hole in it. Now I'm going to just Tell us everything there.
Well, I guess the long story in shortened versions. So we're on a mooring. It snapped at a squall, 1 o'clock in the morning. Before we knew it, the anchor alarm had woken us up, and we'd flicked the oscillator switch, turned on the motor, and we're already grinding on the reef before we even come up into the cockpit.
And we have a brand new engine. It's powerful. And we had it at full throttle trying to get out over this reef, but it had pushed us sideways into the reef, so we were just like stuck.
It was pitch black and blowing 40 knots, and so we were stuck, and we were trying to find our way out. But it was big spring tides at the time as well, and so the tide was dropping rapidly fast. And before we knew it, we just had to accept the fact that we were on the reef. And then once that exception kind of occurred, I suppose we pretty well moved quickly into the next phase. And it was, I remember having that little clarification in my mind. It's like, whatever you do now is going to be dramatic to what happens in the future, and to be able to save Nanji. And so from that, we started ripping up the floor and everything. And because the water was dropping, we kind of knew we had a bit of time.
The tide was dropping, and we had, I think, 6 hours until, was it 4 or 6 hours until low tide?
We had like 3-4 hours until low tide. But from that, we started to get water into the bilge during the time. So we went outside and we started running lines and the anchor and tried to see where we were positioned, but it was pitch black, so it was all like under torchlight. We're trying to figure out how and where we were. And then we're putting fenders under the side to try to cushion Nanji because of all their weight. Last thing we wanted to just be heeling right over onto our topsides. Then we kind of got fenders in, and then we started ripping up the floor and saw some compressions, and we managed to fiberglass up over one big area on the inside because we knew that water was going to be coming in through there. And so when we got all the water out, we felt we're on top of the water, and then we had the boat all positioned up so like we were nice and upright and not heeled right over, and then was just waiting for the water to come in. But when the water started coming, like water started rising, it started coming in the boat.
There was still water coming in, and so we hadn't found all the leaks. And so I was bailing. Josh was outside doing other things, and it got to the point where I realised I can't bail fast enough. I just can't hold. The water was rising and rising, and so So I realised we need some help.
And we kind of realised that all the holes weren't there, and so we thought, as a little added bonus, we were just leaning on the port side, and so we knew starboard was sweet, so it was just on port, and we needed to find them. And so from that, I ripped out our water tank, so we had all our fresh water draining out of all the taps, and so we ripped out the water tank. I ripped the table out, started cutting all the floorboards and cutting the furniture apart to try to find the areas of where the hole was, and it turns out to be under the drawer fridge in the saloon, which I happened to install in Indonesia last year.
That's his pride and joy.
My pride and joy.
I was like, no, I don't want to cut up
I didn't want to cut it up. But from that, it was like, there's no point in saving your fridge if you can't save your boat. And so it literally just turned into ripping everything apart. And then we found that patch. And by this time, a couple of Thai guys that were couple of Thai rangers from the island of where we were, come out to help us out. And so they were downstairs and they were helping us so we got some rags and pounded them into the holes, and then we had a heap of epoxy putty that kind of sets in water and smashing all that in there. And we were super lucky that these Thai guys, it's a bit of a charter boat haven, and so it wasn't the first time they dealt with a boat on the rocks. And
it's notorious. They're like, this happens all the time.
Yeah.
It's fine. And we're like,
please help save us. But yeah, so they went in and they had a big submersible bilge and a long hose, and so we hooked that up onto our batteries, and we managed to keep all the water forward of the engine and the battery bank and all that sort of stuff, which was our biggest thing. That's what we need to protect and save. So if we do float, we need to be able to move. And so we managed to seal it off, all the water, in just the forward half. And then these boys brought over this massive ass bilge pump that just managed to pump out as much water between the bailing, fiberglassing, putting the rags in the holes and everything. We'd managed to stem the water from coming in to the same amount of water that was going out. And then from that, once high water finally came, we managed to weave our way through the reef.
It was only a small amount of water inches that we were in.
And then so we managed to get back through out with these couple of Thai lads in the water and directing us, and then in the tender pushing the bow around because we don't have a thruster. And yeah, and then we managed to get out into deep water, and then from there it was the decision of do we beach her? And the Thai lads were like, there's a nice beach around the corner, we can do that. And we had probably 5 litres of epoxy and heaps of fiberglass on board. But we felt kind of confident as if we did that, we felt like we're going to be in more strife. And so we kind of sat there for 10 minutes and monitored everything. And it was, by this stage, all the squall would blow through. This had taken 12 hours. And then, yeah, so through that, then we're like, well, let's just do it. We're going to take it on. We're going to head to the nearest boatyard, which is where we had left about 10 days earlier. And so we headed straight back there. And we just motored and we took it slow. And as the wind built, we didn't put up any sails because we didn't want to pound and we didn't want to bash. And the angle to the wind is where we were going. The compressions were on the opposite side, so there wasn't really any bashing against the compressions. And yeah, we just took it steady and slow. And
it was a really long sail.
It was really long.
It felt like forever.
Oh shit!
Yeah.
I mean, listen. I mean, yeah. No, I mean that's it. Before I just heard that story, my biggest fear was being sexually assaulted by a clown.
And now
the sexual assault by a clown seems like a...
Yeah.
It seems like, yeah. It's like I'm walking for go.
It's crazy. It's rattled our senses a little bit. Like if the tender bangs on the side of the hull, we're like, what's that? You know, we're still a little bit jumpy with the anchoring and everything, and I think it's going to be a little while for us to really settle back into it.
So tell us about the damage that was done in the end, because I know Josh and Benita, you had to like rebuild your rudder, is that right?
Yeah, correct. So the rudder was totally smashed. That was from partly of trying to make our way out. And so because the wind was so strong, we don't have a bow thruster, I was trying to reverse a bit because you can't hold the bow into the wind. And so I was trying to reverse around. And so it was really the rudder that was smashing into stuff that took a lot of the brunt. And then we had 4 compressions in the hull. So Nanji's a strip cedar wood boat sandwiched in epoxy fiberglass on either side. And so we had these compressions that had gone through. So the fiberglass is cracked on the outside and the wood had smashed and broken. And then the glass on the inside was cracked. And so we didn't have, like, distinctive holes. It was more water just squirting through areas.
If those compressions on the inside push through, then it would be a big hole.
Yeah.
We weren't sure.
And how exactly did you patch it up from the inside? What did you do?
So with the first compression that we found, that it was the major one, that we managed to fiberglass over. So as the water drops... Okay. Basically just got a lot of epoxy and some fiberglass. We had lots of surfboard fiberglass. I used only just thin glass because I didn't want it to take forever to try to seal and hold. Yep. So we used lots of glass and just patched it all down over the top. And that was the biggest.
The boat was dried out for several hours. And
correct.
At that point, you had an opportunity to actually use fiberglass, which is probably very lucky.
Yeah, it was just long enough to kick off. Correct.
Sorry.
Yeah. Sorry, you're right.
No, so the mooring ball that you were on, I'm assuming that you dived it
This is the biggest problem, which why it occurred, and I broke my absolute number one cardinal rule. Beforehand, if we stay out on a mooring, I always dived on it. And even on the anchor, I always dive on the anchor and suss it all out. We're always anchoring 20 metres or whatever, so you can always dive down and see the anchor. And here, we got sucked in to... we arrived at the anchorage at 5:30, not a drop of wind, clear skies, beautiful tropical little island, and picked up the mooring and thought, she'll be right. And literally the first time I've never dived on a mooring, it broke Murphy's Law.
Listen, mate, we've had friends that have done the same. We actually had a couple of our friends also did the same in Dominica, and they knew that a squall was coming through, and the bloke who owned the mooring ball said, look, it's a brand new ball. I'm going to charge you $10 more for this ball because everything is so
new and shiny
and nothing's wrong. And they woke up on the rock. So, and to tell you the truth, Yoshi, you know, don't beat yourself up over this because we've done the same. You get into an anchorage, you crack a cold one, you've had a long sail, and you think, meh, Don't worry about it.
Yeah, it'll be fine.
So yeah, you know what, mate? You know, I said this in the last podcast. It is all fair and well for armchair sailors to sit there and say, "Well, that's not the correct protocol." That is absolute horseshit when it comes down to actually trying to, you know, the actual practicalities of living on a boat. And I've been there. We've been there.
Yeah, definitely.
So you know, but you know.
And even if you had dived on it, you may not have actually picked up on any issues.
Yeah.
It's been so the amount of people that have reached out and said that this has happened to us as well was it's just amazing. And you know, the same thing that you said, don't beat yourself up over it. Like
I definitely went through a phase where I did, and because it was I felt it was 100% my fault, and I was so angry at myself for not doing it. But yeah, I've lived and learned, and I totally understand from it now. Yeah.
He had the therapy on the grinder. As soon as we got into the boatyard, I'm sure a lot of people might feel like, oh, I want to feel sorry for myself or whatever. Yosh is just like, nah, give me the grinder. And that was his therapy. He was on that thing for 10 hours a day, you know, just working his butt off, like fixing it. So
that's a good word. Lucky that was your therapy because,
I mean, it was interesting. When we were sailing in the Caribbean, I mean, we were there 2016, 2017, and we found that a lot of areas in those 2 years went from anchor fields to mooring ball fields.
Yeah.
And we said at the time, you know, I have a lot more faith in my ground tackle because I examine it every day. I know the size of our anchor. I know where the chain's been. I know the shackle. I know that, you know, everything is retained. And I have far more faith in our ground tackle than I do in a mooring ball. And we've died on mooring balls before and we're like, if this blows up.
And also, the lines on the mooring balls can be completely covered in, like, you know, growth. And it can be so hard to see whether there's any issues or not. You're like, well, it looks okay to me. I don't know. I mean, you can't actually see the components that make up.
Listen, and you know, as I said, you know, from what you've said, the way that you handled the situation.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, getting into trouble is... you know, or having problems at sea is a guarantee. It's guaranteed. There is no sailor that has done any sailing that hasn't had a problem from a halyard wrap to a, you know, something more severe like yours. But you know, a testament of the man. And when I say the man, I mean the man and the woman. But the testament of yours is how you deal with a problem. You know, so you know, if you'd been running around, you know, crying with your pants on your head, not doing anything and watching the boat sink. I'd probably have been, actually, you know, you two, maybe you should have taken your pants off your head. But, you know, you dealt with it like champs.
Yeah, you're right.
And you know what? I understand that it's pretty scary. And yes, all the things that have happened to us, you learn, but it makes you fearful. And it made, you know, there's things that I've done on it, it scared me, you know, and I'm, and the greater the problem, you know, the greater the time it takes to get over. And to me, you know, and I'm not saying, you know, you two are far harder than us pair of soft city dwellers at the moment. But, you know, if it takes you a while to get over this, then don't beat yourself up because it would probably take me a year.
Yeah, I would be traumatized.
I'd have had to be on probably 365 mooring balls after that to ever feel safe. So, you know, fair play to you. You know, that the story sent me cold. So
it really did. As Nick said at the very beginning, it's everyone's worst nightmare, and you guys dealt with it so, so well. And you know what? Like, you can kind of take it either way, because I would probably be quite traumatised. But then again, it's not until you're put under pressure and you're put in these situations and you're having to problem solve that you actually, like, have faith in your own abilities. And the learning experience is probably invaluable. And Nanji is, you know, like, good as ever. She's fine, and you guys are fine, and it was all okay now. So yeah, I mean, you guys have so much more experience to draw on now, and if something happens again, then you'll be better prepared to deal with it.
So one question that a lot of people are going to want to know, because that follow your channel, is how's Marley?
Oh, he's
fun. Yes, of course. So we didn't even mention.
He was here before and I was trying to deal with him, but
he was poking
he's
his
good.
Nose in. Nah, he's really
so good.
Yeah.
We're anchored near like a little beach, so he gets to tear that apart every day and chew coconuts and stuff.
For those of you who don't follow Nanji, Marley's their dog. Exactly. Marley's the 4-year-old. We just throw him with the ball. That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
Okay, so let's move on to something a little bit more kind of relevant for not just kind of sailors, but also everyone else watching or listening to this podcast, which is the pandemic at the moment. Mm-hmm. It's affecting everyone, obviously, probably everyone in the world right now. And I feel like at the beginning, everyone, including us, was saying, oh, this is the time where you really want to be out on your boat, you know. This is the moment. This is what we all kind of think of when we go sailing. We're like, oh, if the world comes to an end, then at least we're out on our boat and we can just kind of get on with our own lives and it won't really affect us as much as if we were living on land.
Yeah.
But as things have progressed, I feel maybe that people on their boats are actually at a disadvantage here. Like, I feel like you guys are in a much more stressful situation than we are in, you know, a house in London. I mean, how has all of this kind of evolved for you? Tell us about what's been happening.
Well, when it first, you know, broke out and countries started closing their borders and you know, changing their quarantine regulations and stuff, that was really scary. It was like, you didn't, like, and every day it was like you had to, you know, we were thinking, oh, okay, this place we can't go, but we could go here. And we felt like we still had options, you know, and we were still kind of planning on moving. And then as it just progressed and progressed daily. More every day, it was like, no, this has changed, this has changed, this has changed. And now it's to the point where we are sitting ducks. So we're definitely not going to sail across an ocean and not know how we're going to be received at the other end. So, and I feel like it's kind of wrong to be almost, you know, moving around to like remote communities and stuff where they would be probably terrified to see a boat arrive at this point in time. So, yeah, we are just staying where we are at the moment and...
I guess in a way we were kind of lucky in a respect, because as we snuck into Langkawi, Malaysia, 2 days before they had closed their borders, and you get a 3-month visa upon arrival upon Langkawi. So we do have quite a long time to stay here, whereas other neighbouring countries like Indonesia and Thailand, they have a much shorter visa, and people in the Maldives that begun their crossing, is that they're in the same boat and they're really starting to feel the pressure of where they can go, because everywhere to the west of them is closed, and it's pretty hard to get back to this area, and so countries just aren't accepting vessels. And so it's only if they do accept and extend visas, where some places have been doing that and extending visas for people because of this scenario, but other countries aren't as lenient, you know, and so it is quite difficult for other people. But for us personally, we were quite lucky to sneak in and get our 3-month visa just before it all really started beginning. So,
yeah.
Do I remember when we caught up in Thailand in October, November? Do I remember correctly? You speak Malay. Did you both learn Malaysian? Did I dream that? Or was it Indonesian?
Indonesian. Bahasa. So Indonesian Bahasa and Malaysian Bahasa is similar. And so we spent quite a long time in Indonesia. So I can't say I speak it fluently, but we can definitely get our way around and find what we need speaking Indonesian.
Okay.
Yeah.
I mean, Langkawi, you are quite lucky, actually, because Langkawi is quite, you know... I don't know whether developed is the right word, but you've certainly got supermarkets and you've got, you know, amenities and facilities there. Yeah. So it's kind of, it's really lucky that you were able to get to somewhere like Langkawi in time before all the borders closed.
Yeah, absolutely.
You're absolutely spot on correct. It is quite a tourist island, but obviously there are no tourists here at the moment. There's only other yachties, but it is an island that was quite dedicated for yachting and... it's quite a developed island, but it is isolated away from Malaysia as well. So in that regard, we have all the amenities that we need. Benita went in food shopping the other day.
We went in food shopping yesterday. We weren't sure what the climate would be because, you know, under these circumstances, people can panic and throw their feelings at, I don't know, anyway. Yeah. So So I wasn't sure what the climate would be, and everyone was wearing masks. There weren't many cars on the road, but everyone in the supermarket was wearing a mask. So they were all being like super careful, and they were really respectful of each other. Everyone was really calm. There was no rushing or anything, and everyone was really friendly towards us as well. So
we and there got, was toilet like, paper on the shelves.
Yeah, lots of
yes.
Yeah.
Can you FedEx some of that stuff? You know, there's only so many ramen wrappers you can use to wipe your backside before it starts to scratch a little bit. So yeah, especially if you get those extra chili ones. So, all right, listen. So, obviously, we're gonna, you know, it's amazing to see that you're both safe, and lovely to see you both again. And thank you for looking after us when we were in Thailand. Any message you've got for, you know, to cruisers or to, you know, that, you know, to other sailors or to people sat at home that you want to put across about, you know, how you're doing or how advice you could give?
For sailors, I would probably suggest just staying where you are at the moment and bunkering down and just enjoy the serenity, enjoy where you are, and
yeah, stay at home, really. That's the biggest thing about this current time is staying at home and staying away from people, social distancing, and that's really all you can do. So hopefully other sailors, they have a boat full of food and you can social distance really well. That's the isolation, I guess, that we can utilize at the moment, but that's the best thing, I suppose. We just got to, everyone has to do their part and try to help resolve this situation that's going on. It's crazy.
Stay at home and watch sailing channels on YouTube.
Yeah.
Watch our channel.
Yeah, exactly. Listen, amen to that.
Yeah.
You know, the world, listen, lovely to see you. And, you know, we hope genuinely that within the next 12 months, you know, that we, the four of us, are sat cracking a beer together and you know, and just talking about, you know, remember that time we all had to stay at home for 2 months. So that's Yoshi and Benita.
Yeah, and so just to clarify, the YouTube channel is Sailing Nanji. Yep. And Nanji is, how does Nanji spell? It's got a strange spelling.
Yeah, so Nanji spelled N-A-N-D-J-I. Nanji.
Okay.
Yeah. So that was Sailing Nanji. We'll be back again with another podcast over the next weeks. And, you know, sign up, stay tuned, and hope you enjoyed it. So, thank you.
Thanks, guys.
Awesome. Thanks for having
thank
us, legends.
So much.
Thank you so much for watching this week's episode. If you would like to listen to our other podcasts, then go ahead and search for the Boat Life Podcast, and don't forget to subscribe. For more videos, then please subscribe to our YouTube channel. We'll be back next week with another video for you.